The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's so bad. Like, her big empowerment moment is wearing another dress. This isn't the feminist story that it thinks it is. And she's like just coming from going across the stage in a different dress. It's trying to get as many dresses packed into this small thing as possible. Then the overall effect, because she's wearing so many like layered costumes to get in as many dresses at once. The overall effect is to make it look like Dana spent half her life in ill-fitting dresses that did nothing to flatter her at all.
One out of four dresses will look great.
God awful movie.
Welcome back to the Gamcast, where each week we sample another selection from Christian cinema, except when Heath finally gets the secular movie month that he's been pining for since before the pandemic. I'm your host, No Illusions, and Heath is off this week, but sitting 900 miles to my northeast is my bad friend, Eli Bosnick. Eli, how are you this fine afternoon, sir?
But what a gift he has left behind.
Oh, absolutely.
You know how movies will do that thing where there's like a shitty parent? I'm not comparing Heath to a shitty parent. Stay with me. And then at the end, it turns out they kept the snow globe all along. That's how I feel about Heath's 10-year fight for a secular movie month. And this is the parting gift. See what you could have had all along. Or we open up a box and it's got 40 years of the love letters he's been writing us.
Right, there you go. And of course, we're excited to welcome in everybody's favorite substitute, Heath, co-host of the No Rogan Experience and Skeptics with a K, Michael Marshall Marsh. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you very much. I know you can't hear it, but during that introduction, I changed my outfit. And I changed it again.
That's important.
And there's another one as well. So I'm going to be doing that throughout this recording, just constantly cycling through outfits. You might have seen me in a picture at one point in my life. That's what's going to be happening here.
Yeah, a lot of bare shoulders on Marsh this episode, everybody. Yeah. If ever there was a point where you were missing out on a video version of this podcast, it's this week.
I've got to show every one of my exes what they're missing. That's the whole point of an outfit change, obviously.
All right. Well, now that we've got everybody's curiosity piqued, tell us, Marsh, what will we be breaking down today?
We watched Diana the Musical.
Oh, my God.
It is the West End musical about the life of Princess Diana, as told by people who had only passing familiarity with the life of Princess Diana.
Clearly!
Oh my God, honestly, this is such a mess. I would say it is by far the biggest car crash associated with Diana's mess.
And Eli, how bad was this movie?
Well, if you love Princess Diana and you love musicals, you're going to hate this movie because it's bad at both of those things. Do you remember in Galaxy Quest how the aliens had modeled their society after old episodes of their version of Star Trek?
Yeah.
That's what this Princess Di, the musical, it feels like the aliens got their hands on like a memorial copy of the Princess Diana People magazine, like not a good one, right? And they just sort of took it from there.
Yeah, or like one of those like memorial plates you get in the back of really cheap magazines. Yes. One of those after Diana died and they were like, okay, that's it.
Her Jubilee coin.
Yes. Right, get launched into space somehow. All right, so is there anything you guys want to nominate this one for being the best at being the worst at?
Yeah, I'm going to go straight in with best worst understanding of the British upper class system.
This is in your notes an awful lot. Yes.
Oh, so much. All the way through, they will emphasize that she was just an ordinary girl elevated to the level of princess. She was just working in a kindergarten. She was barely educated. She was the daughter of an earl who was like privately educated and went to a Swiss finishing school. Her marrying Charles isn't like the plucked out of the crowd to marry a prince. It's more plucked out of the small room filled with people who might marry a prince in order to marry a prince. Yeah.
And right. That room also happens to be a family reunion.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So I'm going to go with best worst echoey silence. Okay, so what we're watching here, we're watching this play like before it debuts on Broadway. We're watching it being played to an empty house.
Yeah.
Probably because they recognized, right, that if they had an audience, they would still just have echoey fucking silence. So there might as well be a reason for it to be there. So over and over again, you hear that like these people like drop jokes and they pause to no laughter. They end the big musical number and nothing happens. And nothing should happen. It's a great punctuation to how awful this fucking show is.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. I assumed that this was filmed like during the pandemic or something like that. Cause I know it was released not long after the pandemic
I think it's 2021 when they released it. So yeah, it would have been right then. Yeah.
Given it was filmed during the pandemic, I assumed that the audience wasn't there for pandemic reasons, but it's just so much funnier if it was just, oh no, we shouldn't have an audience in here because that will really show how bad this is.
No. Hey guys, did you all ask your friends and family if they want to see the Broadway show for free?
We did. Yes, we did.
Did they all say no to? Yeah. I tell you what, we'll leave the doors wide open while we're shooting and just hope
maybe by the
people selling
act.
Copies of Big Issue in the West End will wander in from the warmth. And I'm going to go with best worst understanding of the Queen. Now, if you are a regular listener to our program, you know that I am a hardcore supporter of the monarchy. And I would never badmouth the monarchy, except for right now. There is an image, largely created by Diana's death, that the Queen was sort of this super controlling, conniving genius who sort of was running the whole show behind the scenes. And this portrayal of her is so removed. This musical specifically is so removed from the truth of that very lovely inbred pug of a person that it is truly indecipherable. She might as well do karate at a point. And that's when she fought a bunch of ninjas.
I mean, there is a point at which the actress playing her will come on as Barbara Cartland, and that Barbara Cartland is about as close to the real Queen as the depiction of the Queen is in this movie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, obviously, Marsh needs a minute to emotionally prepare himself for this journey. So we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in a minute with all the caterwauling that is Diana, the musical.
People's princess.
Dude, you're going to make yourself sick.
Yeah, sick, nasty.
Hey, fellas, what are you doing?
Eli's back on another fad health diet.
It's not a fad, Noah. It's the way our ancestors ate.
Our ancestors died of their teeth.
Yeah, he's right. They did. Look, Eli, if you want to eat right in the new year, why don't you try Green Chef?
What's Green Chef?
Green Chef cuts through the noise as the trusted authority in healthy eating, delivering only real farm-sourced ingredients.
Well, that sounds great.
It is. Trust every bite with over 40 customizable weekly recipes designed to give you peace of mind.
But is it good for the earth?
It sure is. Green Chef cuts food waste by 20% versus grocery shopping and offsets 100% of delivery emissions.
But have you actually tried it?
I have. Green Chef sent us a box to try when they became a sponsor. I love the delicious meals they sent packed with fresh veggies. That's why I, no illusions, personally endorse Green Chef.
Right now, go to greenchef.com/awfulgraza and use the code awfulgraza to get started with 50% off Green Chef and free Graza olive oil set in your second and third boxes.
That's where it's from.
That's where the Graza's from. This 50% offer is only available for a limited time, so don't wait. That's code awfulgraza at greenchef.com/awfulgraza.
All right, Marsh, thanks. Hope my ancestors liked Green Chef.
Your ancestors would have worshipped a refrigerator as a god.
Nope, that's fair.
All right. I call to order this meeting of British homosexuals and older aunts who for some reason think Princess Di's story is about them. You may be seated.
The people's princess.
Quite. Now, I have absolutely scrumptious news. We have been commissioned to write Diana the Musical.
A musical? But we've never written one of those before.
I mean, how hard could it be? I'm singing a song. Won't you sing along?
Oh, that was right good.
Oh, that's what all musicals sound like to me.
At last, we will tell the heartbreaking tale of a girl who rose from nothing.
Well, I mean, she was the daughter of an earl.
Nothing but being the daughter of an earl, almost. To queen.
Sort of.
She was in the line to be queen if the right number of people died. Look, the point is, we shall use this show to tell her story and talk about her greatest contribution.
Her charity work.
The stuff she did about AIDS.
No. Wearing clothes from the decade she was alive during.
That was the most important.
So brave.
Sorry, is this the meeting for people who think Charlie Kirk is a hero because he got shot in the neck while saying something racist?
No, that's down the hall.
We should get a sign.
Should.
And we're back for the breakdown, and we're going to open up on Diana in silhouette. Always proud of myself when I spell silhouette right on the first try.
And the thing that is going to be hard to explain to you about how good bad this is that almost everybody in this show can really sing.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? No one in this show is executing poorly. They've just been given a map to the hole at the bottom of the sea.
Okay, so first of all, every rhyme in this goddamn show is fifth graderly in its stupidity, right?
Yes.
Everything ends with eight or oast or e or something like that.
And almost all of them are single syllables as well. Yes. There are no complex rhyme structures here at all. Yeah, it's infuriating. Also, you say that we open up with a silhouette of Diana. When the lights come up, are we sure it's Diana? Because I thought for a while it was Hillary Clinton. She looks exactly like Hillary Clinton here.
All right, so Marsh, I saw that in your notes. And then as I was reading through the notes before we recorded, I saw that at one point I had unironically written, the lady playing Hillary Clinton says whatever. All right, so but we open on Diana. She stepped out of a party and now somebody comes to fetch her. Now, it's not just anybody. It's Prince Charles's side piece, Camilla Parker Bowles, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She's come to fetch Diana because the prince would like to flirt with her.
Yes, that is it. And Diana is being like as naive as possible here. Like the way they portray her, this is the first time we get the sense that they have no idea who Diana actually was before she met Charles. Because she's saying, oh, you know, it's such a posh party. I'm used to talking to five-year-olds. It's like, your dad was a fucking earl. You were already nobility.
You've been to some posh parties. Yes. Like,
she's 19. She got engaged to Charles at 19.
Oh,
she
wow.
left her private school at 16 and was in a Swiss finishing school for a little while in between. So it's not been that long since she's been in a very, very posh room. It really hasn't. Even the fucking five-year-olds were probably all nobility anyway.
Right?
Yes. And it's not like the Swiss finishing school was just busting with lawyers and doctors. That is a one day you might end up the queen school.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Also, we have to point this out. The songs in this goddamn show are so forgettable that not only are none of them stuck in my head after watching it yesterday, but I cannot recall a single tune from it. This movie doesn't have earworms. It has ear like birds, right? It's the closest I can come to the opposite of a worm. I should know the opposite of a fucking worm. That's my whole thing.
There is no Department of Diana the Musical.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's genuinely tricky because I actually watched this more than a week ago. I think I watched it before Christmas even as of recording. And I was thinking, oh, it's fine. I'll remember all of what my notes were referring to as we go through. I think because it's so forgettable, I'm going to really struggle to know which song this is about. I'm lucky that I've written the note, she is smugly singing about how underestimated she is. That reminds me, this is the song Underestimated. And I've written that this is happening in a movie that wildly overestimated itself and its appeal.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it's also like a weirdly triumphal song for the like first song of your musical. Right. It sounds like you're closing the first act here. We're just introducing shit.
Yeah. And the spirit of the song is like, I'm such a normal person, which we've already talked about. I'm such a humble nobody. But, you know, I'll give marrying the Crown Prince of England a try.
Yeah, sure. Like
the way that we are supposed to believe that Diana approached marrying the future King of England is like, I mean, the med school exams seem tough. So I think, yeah, you know what? It's one hand to the other.
But again, it probably was that because she was bred to be in that world. This was like if she went to the careers advisor at her incredibly posh private school, marrying the future king was probably one of the options she was presented.
Sure, yeah.
Like, you've not got the maths to do more than that, but have you thought about marrying the king?
Well, also, like, the way that she...
Social work.
Well, the way that she describes it in song is, quote, why not have a go at marrying the king?
All right, I'll be the Queen Mum of England, I will.
That's not the Queen Mum.
She would have been eventually.
That's not what the Queen Mum is.
No, she gets it eventually. She stabs her and then she takes her powers.
Right, what do you think the Queen Mum is?
I see, you lost me a think. I don't.
So, okay.
I heard those words once and now they are in my mouth.
Do you think
sometimes.
It's just that when the queen is a mum, she's
I think that's what I think.
When he's talking about the maternal aspects of the queen, he just says the queen mother.
The mumminess, if you will.
So, okay. So, but then the queen, just the queen, shows up. And she's there to complain that her playboy son hasn't settled down yet, right? He needs to up his PR game.
Yeah, and the line in there is, it was fine when you were new, but God, you're 32. It's, oh, fuck me. We're in for a long old ride here. Yeah. We're in for a long old ride.
Speaking of the Queen Mum, this is when I wrote for the first and not the last time in my notes, don't you betray the Queen Mother like this, you ungrateful fuss.
And again, I even wrote on my notes, on the notes, not the Queen Mother. I wrote that next to that. Okay.
So. That did not dissuade me from writing it.
The Queen Mother, just to be absolutely clear, does not appear in this entire thing. The Queen Mother is not in this. She might as well not exist for the purposes of the next hour and a half, but you will carry on.
That's the spider underneath the castle.
Yeah.
The other thing is the Queen says that there's a trust issue with the public. And that's why Charles needs to get married. And I think the trust issue might be more Andrew's fault than Charles's.
Yeah.
And then I wrote, oh man, where's Andrew's musical? Can not have that instead?
Yeah.
So, okay. Now the whole thing that they start a fucking song here, because of course they do. And the whole bit of the song is that the queen is going to sing the upside of Diana, you know, marrying her son. And then like the chorus behind them is going to sing the downside. Like, that's the construction of the song.
They will call being princess the worst job in England multiple times throughout the song.
Yes.
And like, look, I've never been a princess, but I assume there were child sex slaves during this period in history.
I mean, yeah, Andrew's
Exactly,
right.
In the same castle, there were worse jobs.
Right. Jesus.
Actually, that's who was singing that the princess is the worst job. Like, all the sex slaves were the chorus in the background.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I don't fancy yours much, love. That's basically the line from the song.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to fuck Prince Charles. I get it. But yeah.
Oh, and speaking of the chorus, because they're doing the, as you say, the downside to it, they're doing this sort of the dancing thing. At one point, the entire backline chorus start thrusting their crotch at our queen. And that's the closest I've ever got to being offended on behalf of my monarchy.
That and when I use the Queen Mother wrong. Those are the two lines that Marge has left.
I mean, I really want the queen to turn around to them and say, could you stop saying bad things about marrying my son?
Yeah, that's right. I'm trying to make a fucking point here. My son is, God damn it. So then we cut to Diana chatting with her sister about whether or not she should, you know, date the prince and marry him or whatever.
And the very small moment here. This is the first time we see what will become a running theme throughout this entire musical. Diana is wearing, first of all, an incredible jumper. It's like this red jumper with like white kind of sheep on it. That is a genuine jumper that she wore. There's an entire BBC article about her in that jumper. And that's because they will try very hard. The only thing they'll get accurate throughout this entire thing is the clothes that Diana wore. Mm-hmm. And they really want you to know that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very obvious that whoever wrote this libretto / musical / whatever the fuck it is, was really a visual learner, if you know what I'm saying. There's a lot of attention to outfits, not so much on the rhymes.
Yeah.
So they also imply at this point that Princess Diana grew up with like foldouts of Prince Charles taped to her walls, a la like, you know, the teen magazines or something. Teen Beat had, British
Please
Teen Beat
tell
had,
me Charles was in the center of tiger beat in Britain?
Joe, I didn't look that up. I assume not, but it was a weird time. It would have been like late 70s.
Possible.
It's a weird time. I don't know. I wasn't around for that bit.
Sure.
Andrew's copy was the only one that had 15-year-old Charles in it. Okay, but this is again where they sort of go against their own narrative, right? Because Diana is supposed to be this simple kindergarten teacher plucked from obscurity and then married to the prince. Except in this scene, they admit that he dated her older sister first.
Yes. Yep.
Was she just also plucked? Yes. What kind of random yes. job was she supposed to have?
Yeah, a masseuse. She worked for Jeffrey Epstein. It's just, it was in the family. It was in the family.
Woof. There's also a point here where her sister says to her, she goes, and you're still a virgin. And I'm like, hey, the play.
Mm.
What the, the fuck? Weren't you just complaining how people were going to sexually objectify her in the last fucking song?
And the thing is,
Jesus,
that was real. The press did do that. They did talk about whether Diana was a virgin, because that at the time was still, because anachronistic country that we are, that was still a big part of the conversation. That was a part of the conversation up until Kate Middleton married Prince William.
Oh my God.
And then the palace kind of obfuscated around that. So yeah, this play is going, oh, and you're a virgin, but it might as well, they might all, every actor turn to the audience that isn't there and go, wink, wink, yeah. You know, she is still a virgin, wink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then Prince Chucky sends her a really nice necklace, and then he calls her to ask her about the necklace.
The second the box gets opened, like yes. He's put a GPS tracker inside of it. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So, but he wants to make a date. He wants to take her to listen to a cellist play Bach, right?
Mm.
So she accepts, and then he gets off the phone and he's talking to Camilla, right? Camilla was like there with him. I guess she's like advising him the whole time on how to date Diana.
Well, and they're fucking, right?
Well,
like
yes,
this is
yeah.
part of oh, what 100%. We're supposed to see
yeah.
is.
And honestly, I find it hard to either dislike or blame his relationship with Camilla through any of this movie and any of his actual life. Like he wanted to just be with Camilla, and it was bullshit that he wasn't. Like there was an entire
right.
bullshit
yes.
thing around him not being allowed to marry someone who was divorced.
Right, like she was divorced or something before. Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. And all of the bad things happened because of that stupid rule first and foremost. And like, just let the guy have the lady. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Yep.
Yeah. I find it, she's going to be the bad guy here. And I find it hard to see her as a bad guy.
Right. Yeah. But so Camilla and Charles are now talking about Diana and they're like making fun of what a simpleton she is. She wanted to go see some pop band instead of a sophisticated cellist playing Bach.
Yeah.
He also invites Camilla to join him on their date. So woof. All right. So now we're going to get this was the first scene where I was like, you guys knew you were making shit. You had to know you were making shit when you did this scene, right? Because this is the scene where they're going to watch this cellist play Bach, but she's going to spend the whole time wishing they were at a rock concert. And so they like flip back and forth between rocking out and listening to Bach.
Yes. And so this is a problem for a lot of reasons. First of all, being they're making it seem like she wouldn't know anything about classical music, despite being the privately educated member yes. of British nobility whose dad was an earl. She'd be very familiar with Bach.
Yeah, I think she'd heard a cello before.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we'll find out she can sort of play the cello. I mean, probably not. But
yeah.
Then it has the lines in this song. Oh, God, this is, I think, where we get a hint of how bad the lyricism of this is going to be. One line I wrote down, the Russian, because there's a Russian guy playing the cello, the Russian plays on and on like an endless telethon. How I wish that he were Elton John. And that really had to go all the way around, not just around the houses, around the palace for that rhyme. Telethon.
Yeah, telethon. Yes.
In what way is this like a telethon, Princess?
Well, I don't want to watch it. I say this with an open heart, right? Because she spends so much of this song describing how she's too stupid for fancy music.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta stop letting gay men write for women, okay? I get it, straight people. We're like, I don't know any women and I don't want to let them write any of their own musicals. What's the closest to a woman I know? My gay writer friend. I'll get him to do it. But they are, in fact, different. Cis gay men and women are actually different species.
Species, huh?
Yeah, different species.
So
they're both the queen mother.
They do all
gotta follow my chart.
So yeah, but so they do this whole big long rock Bach thing. I don't even think they ever fucking rhyme rock and Bach. They're so fucking
Jesus,
stupid.
I don't think they do. Oh yeah. My God. They do rhyme rocker with Charles saying he'd like to sock her.
Yes, woof. Right.
Right. When she says, oh, I'd really like to sock her. You're like, oh God, what are you trying to set up here? You fucking idiots.
Yeah. So yeah, it's down to Camilla. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. And then it's just fucking Rocker. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, so everybody walks off. Camilla sings a little bit about how she fucking hates Diana and is jealous of her. And then we get our paparazzi chorus for the first time, right?
Oh, yeah. The Dick Tracys.
Yes, exactly. And at one point, one of them went, hey, guys, we can twirl our trench coats. And they're like, fuck, that is literally all the choreography we need, right?
Oh, they love these little boy twink dancers. They have a love a twirled trench coat in this film.
Yeah, they really do. I'm surprised neither of you have picked up too much on the line that paparazzi say about taking pictures of Diana. Better than a Guinness, better than a wank, snatch a few pictures and it's money in the bank. Oh my God.
I did write down better than a wank.
Oh, you did? Nobody involved in this musical can ever have talked to an actual British person to think that is a normal thing to have for anyone to
better
say.
Better than a wank. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
she's changed outfit again in this as well. And she is just powering through the outfit changes. And I can only assume that she starts off the start of this play in about 8 layers of clothing and just keeps peeling them off like an onion because I can't think of any other way to be done. And to be fair, that would have mirrored the weight loss she experienced due to bulimia. So maybe yeah, exactly.
It's a twofer. It's perfect.
Oh, there you go. So yeah. Also, during the song, one of the paparazzi says to another, I hear she's still a virgin.
But again, the newspapers were actually writing that as headlines. So like, because I thought, God, that's fucking weird. And I looked up and was like, oh yeah, we're weird. What a weird country we are.
So yeah. All right. So, and then at the very end, they all of the paparazzi assemble at the end as though to say, yes, this was choreographed. Otherwise, how would we have all not hit each other just now?
This was the first time that I realized there wasn't an audience there because they do this extremely long pause at the end of the dance number for what they are sure is going to be the two standing ovations of the following night.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been that the entire audience was still dumbstruck trying to work out better than a Guinness, better than a wank. That's what you went with? Just like, yeah, could be.
All right. But so now the queen thinks Chuck should fucking put a ring on it already, right? Because she wouldn't want Diana to be mistreated in the press.
Yeah, because the Queen was very famously very sympathetic to how Diana was treated at any given point. That was a very famous part of their collective story.
She loved Diana, really wanted things to go well for old Diana. And then they have this stupid conversation where Charles is like, were you certain when you were married? And I wrote in my notes, well, you know, my uncle was trying to solidify his power by joining up with Hitler. So I was pretty sure.
But it's not just that. Like, yeah, she was certain. The Queen was certain when she married Prince Philip, but that's because she'd known him a while. He was her cousin and they met at a family wedding.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
So yes.
Well, and Charles though is like, well, okay, but theoretically, what if I wanted to live as a tampon in somebody else? Okay. Right. So, but then they have this fucking half-ass song where, like, I shit you not, this is one of the lines, okay? This is where I just basically had to, like, tell my wife to hide the rope. She says, he got down on one knee, he did it properly, and that was enough for me.
It's almost like the queen is kind of taunting you to answer her riddle so that you can get her pot of gold.
Yes, exactly. So that you can become the queen. Yeah,
exactly.
Like I wrote in my notes at this point, the tunes are so forgettable that you forget them while you're listening to them.
Yes.
Right? Like like the second verse, you're like, fuck, was that the two? So, okay. So now Diana shows up and this is where she starts telling her backstory about how her mom ran off and that's why she loves Barbara Cartland romances.
Mm. Okay. I cannot emphasize to our audience enough how central a figure in Diana the musical romance author Barbara Cartland is.
Yes.
And for those of you who aren't British, it's like chicken soup for the soul, but lady porn. You have to imagine that there was an entire musical about a modern American historical figure, and the only literary reference made in the entire thing were Dave Barry columns in the newspaper. That's how weird it is to constantly use Barbara Cartland as a literary device in this show.
It's like if in Hamilton, the writer of Twilight had her own song in the middle of Hamilton. Yeah, it's amazing. And so I don't know whether Diana was a massive fan of Barbara Cartland's books. I looked it up because, as you say, Barbara Cartland appears in this scene. Barbara
yes, she Cart- just the shows queen, up.
The actor,
yes.
The actor playing the queen put on a big pink dress and comes on as Barbara Cartland. I was like, why is Barbara Cartland gatecrashing this? And I looked up, it's because Barbara Cartland was her step-grandma. So there's a real thing that the writer was like married into Princess Diana's family on her dad's side. So that is real, which then just makes it weird that Diana only ever refers to her as Barbara Cartland and not like step-grandma.
We have this scene where she shows up and Diana asks her about romance and she says that romance is bullshit. And then, speaking of which, then we get Chuck's proposal, right? Which is very afterthoughtly.
By the way, just for those of you who haven't gone down a Barbara Cartland rabbit hole, again, this is like such insider humor for fucking British great grandmas, but they all had this baby blue cover with identical fucking artist plates from like fucking Little Women the musical on them. And every title feels like something you would make up in a comedy about romance novels, right? The Bored Bridegroom, The Impetuous Duchess, The Magic of Paris. Those are all real Barbara Cartland books.
Yes. Oh, 100%. Yeah. I was about to make a reference that it's like Jilly Cooper, but worse. But I thought, I don't think Jilly Cooper's a reference.
Nope,
that's
going to
have American audiences either. But yeah, anyway.
The Four Brits and Me loved that, though. Just know the four, if Dr. Alice is listening to this one, she's fucking out of the park.
So, okay, so Chuck proposes. She's like, do you love me? And he's like, yeah, whatever. And then we cut to like him telling Camilla that he's proposed to Diana, but he would dump her for Camilla in a second. I'm like, that's a pre-proposal discussion rather than post, right? So, okay. So now we've got the press comes in again and they're hounding her about the engagement now.
Yep, they say the line, she was common, she was dim. And again, no, she fucking wasn't. Dad. Earl, not
yes.
common.
Yeah. Right. And also, this is the first of many times where they call her stupid, right? Like she was coming.
So
she was,
many times.
Well, and also, I have to point out the rhyme there is she was far from worthy of him. So bad. And this is where we meet like her guy, Paul. I don't know who this is.
Okay. So this is Paul Burrell. Okay. Paul Burrell was her assigned butler and would be her butler throughout her time at the palace. I think he even went with her when she got divorced from Charles and was around her and stuff. So like he will be a central figure as his like as her savior, her rock. But he betrayed her quite badly. He was like leaking a lot of information to the press. And I think also stole quite a lot of her dresses after she died. So he is.
Oh, wow.
This is very much Paul Burrell as told by Paul Burrell is what we're seeing on screen here.
So we meet him. He'll be important-ish later. We get Chuck and Camilla singing at each other a bit, and then everybody la-la-las into the wedding.
Yeah. Yes, and a very minor note, but Camilla enters to the wedding here while dressed as what I can only describe as Liz Truss, the naval aircraft carrier. That's what she looks like.
And so, okay, so they're going to do this a couple of times in this show. They're going to do magic tricks just to piss Eli off, just to really dig in.
Fuck yeah, they will. Eli.
And they do, this is the bit where fucking David Copperfield sword fights himself, right?
Yes.
He takes the mask off at the end and it turns out it was him the whole time. And so they have like Charles and this bride walk out and it's obviously, I mean, I don't want to give away how this trick is done, but like, the suit is so wide, right?
It's like so wide. I wrote that there are at least three Dianas worth of space in that wedding dress. And she isn't even one of those three Dianas.
Right, sure isn't. Right, yeah. Because we see her instead, like, pre-wedding, getting cold feet with her sister, right? We have a quick scene there.
Yes.
She looks at her dress. She goes, well, it'll make me look fat. And I'm like, well, only because you have to climb in it after it's
only because it's a wire frame meant to fool absolutely nobody with object permanence.
Yeah, I'm not, or because it was designed to hide the toilet roll in your nan's house. So let visitors think there is a toilet roll in there.
All right. But yeah. And also, by the way, whoever the fuck tried to rhyme I can with demand didn't consider that it was going to be sung in a British accent.
Yeah. We get some really quality rhymes in this one. Represent the crown. No time now to back down.
Yeah. It is beautiful. There's also a line in it where they say, well, how did she get this far? It's like, yeah, she got here all the way from her 900-year-old 13,000-acre stately home to marrying someone who was already within her social circle.
Right, yeah.
Yes. And family bloodline.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, right.
Oh, but at the end of this scene here, there's something very controversial that happens that I need to know if this is true. She says, when they get to the end of the marriage ceremony, she says, I will instead of I do. Do the Brits say I will instead of I do during weddings?
We don't, but she did. Because I had to look that up as well, because I was like, really? But yeah, that Princess Diana, her wedding vows were I will. And I think he did the same. And I think she also fucked up his name, which I don't know if that means she got the order of his names wrong when he had to, because I take, because he's obviously, his name's fucking mad because he's an inbred bug of a human being, as Eli points out. So he's got like 18 different names and she gets the order wrong.
Sure.
But I don't know if that means they weren't legally married, like the time that Obama had to retake the oath of office because he fucked a little bit of it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the next day. So maybe they were never married in the first place.
Oh, interesting.
But no, she said, I will rather than I do.
All right. Well, as indelicate as this is to say about a Princess Diana musical, I fear that this play is moving too fast and erratically. So we're going to take a minute to fasten our seatbelts, but we'll be back in a minute with even more of Diana the Musical.
It's fine. The director was drunk, to be honest, but MI5 had dosed up his drink.
Yeah,
it's weird that the cameras were off for this part, though.
Well, that's why there was no audience there.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Ooh, and people are going to start living up to my expectations of them. That is a huge one.
Right. Hey, guys, what's with the list?
Oh, hey, Noah, I'm just having Marsh read my New Year's resolutions.
Oh, how's that going?
Yeah, so he's got a lot of resolutions for other people.
I do. Like, Marsh is going to be more appreciative of the websites I build for him.
I'm sorry, your resolutions are for other people?
Yeah, that's what's always making me angry.
Right. You know, Eli, it might be a bit better for you to focus on your own thoughts and your own behaviors.
Psh, how can I do that, Marsh? A thought-o-matic? Because if that's real, I haven't seen it.
No, Eli, you can do that with therapy.
Therapy? I thought therapy was just for people who go...
Not at all. Therapy can help you with perspective, to work through personal issues, or to just lend an ear if you need someone to listen to.
And if you're considering therapy, you should think about online therapy with BetterHelp.
What's BetterHelp?
BetterHelp does the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12 plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. But if you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recommendations.
So no awkward therapy breakups?
No awkward therapy breakups. You can't step into a lighter version of yourself without leaving behind what's been weighing you down. Therapy can help you clear space. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/awful. That's betterhelp.com/awful.
All right, Noah, thanks.
All right, you guys ready? I don't want to miss any more football.
Oh, you're going to care about football way less this year.
Yeah, again, not doing other people.
Right, sorry. Sorry.
Fucking playoffs, bet your ass. Hey, Chris, do you have a second?
Why, of course, gentlemen. How go rehearsals?
Right, so about that. I know you've written the musical as a tribute to Diana.
The people's princess.
Right, right. So we were just...
You just say it.
I'm sorry, say what?
Say the people's princess. I said the people's princess.
Oh, the people's princess. Anyway, we were actually worried that the show might make her look bad.
Bad? How?
Well, you do call her stupid quite a bit.
What? I would never.
No, what? This foolish girl, this unschooled girl, simple, dim.
Yes, stupid. Like literally the word stupid.
Mm-hmm. No, you fools, don't you see? That's all a setup for when she shows them all at the end.
Yeah, by describing her sex life on the phone?
Yes.
Okay, I mean, if you say so.
The people's princess.
The people's princess.
Yeah. And we're back for more of this shit. And we're going to rejoin the action with Camilla and her husband, who we haven't met yet. He's going to sing a love song to her now, damn it.
he has not earned a refrain to any of these songs.
No.
Like, just stay out of this. You're not needed here.
You're not in the sketch.
Okay. Mm. I love Camilla's husband, one, in real life and also in this musical so much. Because that dude, everyone was like, huh? Your wife fucking another guy. And he's like, yeah, no, I get to like go to royal shit. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah,
fair.
He can run her through with a rocking horse if he wants to. Do you know how awesome it is to be this rich? You guys know I have to go to a palace now, right? I go to a palace.
Right.
Someone's fucking your wife, and all you get to do is kill them both while they're asleep.
Like, oh, God.
This is fine. I don't care a little.
So, okay. And then they have this scene, and I love this scene so fucking much, right? Because this is the song about how Diana's all nervous. She has to make her first official appearance, and she's so nervous. It's going to be so hard. But, like, her job is just to smile and kind of wave, like sort of exist in space is the job there. So like even the song can't pretend that's hard.
Yeah, it's not even like the rule is just don't say anything racist because Prince Philip showed that's not a rule. That is not a rule. You can say what you like. Yeah, it's absolutely fine. Right.
Charles too. Everyone in that family at some point has been like, so are you dirty or brown? I don't get it. What's fucking going on? Right, the whole song is like, she hasn't received the training to say hi?
Yes. Right, exactly.
Maybe she hasn't received the training to talk to an average person because they weren't any of those at her Swiss finishing school.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, but she has to stand and bask in all the free money bilked from the nation. It's going to be really difficult. So now we're in Wales.
And we know that because it's got the word Wales written in big block capitals, like it does whenever you're in Wales. If you're in the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, it just says Wales across the sky
exactly,
at all times.
Right. Well, you'd never guess it from the fucking accents, so they had to do something.
No. There's a weird Wales racism to this scene, right? Because the whole point of this scene is she didn't just walk by. She shook the hands of the Welsh. The Welsh, I tell you. Have you ever met
She's
a Welshman?
She's willing to touch an AIDS patient and a Welshman.
Never threw up. Not even a hit.
Didn't have gloves on or anything.
This would have been the early 80s as well. So those Welsh people, they would have still had coal dust on their hand because Thatcher hadn't closed the mines yet. So there was still coal in them there.
Look them right in their far apart eyes. No problem.
Yeah. So she gets there's a really tough crowd because, you know, the Brits in the 1980s sure hated the royal family and everything.
I mean, the Welsh might. I'm not sure. The Welsh are pretty socialist. I reckon the Welsh, if there was enough of them to work a guillotine towards London, I think they would have operated it. And I'd have been well on their side as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but then, but they... In-
but can you buy a guillotine on credit? I was too busy laughing at my own joke. I'm sorry.
So, okay.
I'm not laughing at that because I could see Wales from my house and I know self-preservation.
So, but then, like, the song itself undercuts this whole idea of, like, oh, you know, they're going to be really hard to please because she doesn't do anything, right? She just shakes their hand and they're like, wow, she touched me. The song literally says, will you please take my hand? I am now your biggest fan.
Yes. And also, take this rose, take this bouquet, Diana, make my day. That's how their Welsh accents go. Oh, it's so bad. That's all it takes. And then all of Wales fell in love right there and then.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Not so much with Charles, though. And I'm like, it's probably the ears.
I was comforted, though, because I have gotten slack from our British listeners for how my British accent is. But the moment these West End actors were asked to do Welsh, they all sound like fucking Little Britain's cuts from the cutting room. The more problematic parts of Little Britain and Mighty Boosh.
But the point here, though, is that Charles gets really jealous of how well-received Diana is. So we get a scene where Camilla is trying to console him about that.
Yeah, and again, like, and they talk about what's kind of going on with her husband and stuff. Camilla and her husband, they come across as the own, like, exclusively as people who are pretty comfortable with who they are and what's going on in their lives. Like this musical may as well be a Camilla propaganda piece.
Honestly,
because I don't think she was queen at the time that this, she wasn't allowed to be queen at the time that this came out. And I think we changed the rules on that since. So I think this might have been part of her PR push to be allowed to become queen by renovating her reputation here.
Oh, there you go. But at this point, she tells Chucky that she needs to break it off with him because it's ruining stuff with her husband, right? And so right on the heels of that, Diana comes in all bubbly and in high contrast with Chuck's sudden sadness. So he gets all snippy, right?
And of course, this actress plays Diana is like perpetually on the edge of a breakdown. So as soon as he's like, you know, hey, I'm upset right now, not in the mood for your good news, she completely loses it. Right.
Yes.
And tells us about how it's really hard to do no work and be a publicly funded billionaire. I mean, genuinely, I'm sure she had a very hard life at this point. Like, I know she tried to kill herself several times and had bulimia. And like, I'm sure it was like really actually very difficult for her at this point, but it's still kind of fucking hilarious to watch this person go like, it's so hard to have so many billions of dollars to worry about.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, she had the hardest job in England, and yes, that is because at the time the country was going through a mass unemployment crisis that was leaving people destitute. So
right,
a lot
exactly.
of people didn't have jobs, but yeah, you have it hard.
A lot of those Welsh people were free all day. That's why they were there with the flowers.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were going to eat those flowers after she left. I also, this is where he says, I love you. I think we're supposed to think for the first time. Right. And he says it like when you realize that this is your favorite Thai place in town, like, you know what? I love you.
Yeah. Right. Right. No,
I love you in a way.
Yeah.
And this is, she says she's pregnant as well. She's, I've got something to tell you. It's a baby, Charles. And he says, what? It's like, she can't say it much more clearly than that. I mean, she's holding a stomach
she's
and saying,
hinting.
I've got something to tell you. It's a baby, Charles.
Yeah.
You can put the pieces together here.
Right. So, but he sure hopes it's a boy. It is. Then we get her singing to baby William. At this point, she's got to like sing extra syllables so that the rhymes catch up with each other, you know?
Again, we get some hard gains in again here.
Yes.
Yeah, they struggle so hard to think of rhymes. It's almost to the point where it leads to really odd situations. Like at one point during this song, she wonders if she dare call her baby her own. But like, it's obviously your baby. It might have been, like, it could have, there's questions of a parentage, but normally on the dad's side,
yes,
not on the mum's side.
Yeah.
And we rhyme, like, heir is an heir to the throne with their, and we rhymed B with family. And it's like, oh God, it's every
it's
single
so
one of them is such a dull rhyme.
Bad.
And I think we haven't expressed sufficiently is there's almost no spoken words in this entire 2 hour long thing.
Oh no. Yeah. It's almost an opera. Yeah.
It's everything. Song crashing into song, crashing into song. Yeah.
Yeah. In all the worst ways. Yeah. So, but Charles is impressed with the kid's possession of a penis. And then he gets a call from Camilla. And, you know, he sings about how he loves Camilla more than Diana, and Diana overhears it.
Mm.
Right. So she says, hey, did you just say something about being her tampon? And he goes, no, I said I felt tramped on. tramped on. But then he leaves and she sings a song about how he totally said tampon.
I could use a prince to save me from my prince is one of the lyrics in that song.
Yeah, it's bad. It is so bad.
We get the famous wall punch. Again, so for those of you who didn't follow fucking British tabloids when I was 10 years old and Noah was getting married to Lucinda, this was a huge, this got leaked from the palace that she punched a window and it broke and she cut her hand.
Oh,
gotcha.
I didn't know that.
Yes, this is a huge, oh yeah, because they turned it into like she's a homicidal maniac who pulled two panes of glass free from the royal windows and held someone at, you know, a fucking glass to their throat and was like, bring me the blood of a Welsh. But what actually happened is she like slammed something too hard and it cracked or whatever. But this is, it's such a perfect representation of this musical taking like a weird tabloid detail that only four people were obsessed with and turning it into the throat slitting scene from Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. Like she just turns to a bathroom cabinet and just like a Diana smash. Like, yeah. Like she might as well, like, Diana smash. Cool. Ah.
So, okay, so now she's on bed rest after a suicide attempt, right? They've only got one wrist wrap, like she gave up halfway through. And then she's talking with her sister at this point. And her sister's like, I think you're only trying to kill yourself for attention. I'm like, oh, don't just say it like that, man. Fuck.
The musical hedges its bets way too much on like, she might have just been dramatic. Like, let's not necessarily assume she was in psychological torture. Yep. She might have just been doing it being wham, sure. Like, we want to be fair on how we portray this mentally ill woman.
Also, it does this annoying little winky thing to the future as well. She says, well, I'm not going to get a divorce. What am I going to do? Rent a flat in Kensington. Because she did do that. That's the joke. Oh, is that she did get a flat in Kensington.
I see.
Is the joke.
And it's like when they do stuff like that, it's so
beautiful that they have no audience, right? And it's just echoey silence echoing back to him. Yeah.
So good.
So, okay. So, but then just as the sister is saying what a piece of shit Charles is, he shows up, right?
Yes. So like, sorry, I hope you don't mind. I've arrived mid-sentence about me.
Yes.
So let's carry this on. Yeah.
He shows up and she's like, how are the boys? And he's like, I don't fucking know. Neither of us know. We did not race them. It's insane that this musical thinks we have anything other than a passing handshake relationship with either of them.
Yeah.
So yeah, but he's very put out by all her suicide attempts. But at this point, he tells her, he says he wants to make the marriage work for the sake of the media, right?
For the sake of you stopping doing this.
Oh, yes, right, right.
So we don't do this ever again. Yeah.
How do we cut this out, huh?
Yeah.
How do we cut this out?
Right. So, but she decides she wants to do more charity work. And then the queen cuts in to sing us a song about how hard it is to be a good billionaire leech of the public coffers.
And I genuinely couldn't tell if the queen was entering the same room as that scene was happening in or not. Because the direction, everything just keeps flowing around so much that they're still on stage while the queen's singing. I was like, are you not going to address the fact that your mum just walked in singing? No, okay. No.
That's what she does. That's what she's famous for. She secretly smokes and sings wherever she goes.
Yep. Yeah, so but she sure is jealous of Di, and so is Camilla.
Every other woman in this play talks about how jealous they are of Princess Di. Every single one at all times.
Yeah, and her startling beauty.
Yep.
Totally came in, right, women? Sorry, guys, you want to cut that? I had a little cough there.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, I will cut it out. So, but then we get Diana meeting cancer patients and Charles wishing he was more beloved.
Oh, she loved hanging out with cansos. That's what Marsh calls them, cansos.
Oh, we're extending it to cancer patients now. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just going through everything you've ever said is skeptically bad, and then whatever the subject is, you hate those people.
Oh, that's, I thought you just going through anything anyone my family's ever suffered with. Just one,
yeah, that's
by just, one.
I thought it was, I think it's a good crossover.
So, okay, so then we cut to the Royal Ballet Gala, where we're going to spend some fucking time, right? This movie has fast-forwarded through the birth of her kids and her multiple suicide attempts and her bulimia to really dig in on the Royal Ballet Gala.
Oh. Which was a thing. It was a scandal.
Sure,
was a
scandal,
you then. Simple whore. If you only knew what a scandal this was, Noah Lucian, you red-cheeked rube, you don't understand the tears that were shed.
She danced with Wayne Sleep.
Yes.
How vulgar.
Yes.
It was, she essentially shoved the prima donna of the English ballet up her vagina in right in the queen's face. Mm-hmm. That's basically what she did, Noah.
So, okay, so the scene starts off with Charles sitting down and he's like, hey, where's my wife? And the assistant goes, well, I believe she's still in the bathroom, sir. And he goes, fucking bitch, always in the fucking pissing every
it's basically
goddamn
the servant is going, oh, she's busy pissing, sir. I believe she's in the middle of a piss.
She's doing one of those long shits where you feel bad, but not like, you know that if you can just get the whole shit out, you'll be fine, but it's a real so, journey.
Okay. So then they're like, you know, here comes the ballet dancer. And so this mustachio ballet dancer comes out and then Diana comes out and dances with him. And yeah, right. Like apparently Charles and his mom hate dance like John Lithgow and fucking Footloose.
Oh my God. They, according to this musical, they then banished everyone from this public. He just stands up and he's like, everybody out.
Yes.
Out of the Royal Gala immediately. And Diana says to him, I did it to make you proud. It's like, but if Diana did do that in real life to make him proud, she actually is an idiot because he's been quite clear. He'd hate that so much.
Yeah,
like that would be a really stupid thing to do to make him proud.
And the scene that takes place afterwards is, and I really need you to internalize this, podcast listener, the confrontation from Les Mis, but it's Charles and Diana having a fight about her doing a little ballet.
Yes.
And him, every rhyme ends with her name.
Well,
and
okay,
every one of his lines is Diana. Yeah.
At this point, the fucking writers discover that, right? That they're like, hey, guys, you could just end every line with the same word and everything rhymes, because they do that like four more times in this fucking movie.
Okay, can I give you guys my favorite lyric from this confrontation scene?
Oh, please. Mm. Yes. Uh-huh.
Stop being a martyr, Diana. Why can't you be smart, Diana?
So we should also point out that this song has a distorted guitar desperately trying to convince us that it fucking rocks. Okay.
He's trying to shred so hard and it is failing at the shred. It also has some distorted pronunciation because at one point Prince Charles says the word be practical to her. So no idea what that's meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she sings about how sad it all is. And I'm like, oh, that must be why it hurts so much to watch. And then she has this fucking song that she sings where the chorus of it is her going, te amo, te quiero, I'll say it every way I know.
Mm.
But then she doesn't say it any other ways. Right? Yeah. And she just or ever repeat it. Yeah, well, she comes back to it one other time and I'm just like, well, say, like, it's, if you're going to do that, then you have to say I love you in like 10 different languages is a big part of the song. But no.
Yeah, I want to going through like Mandarin. I want to going through Klingon. Yes. Just like some of those weird ones from Lord of the Rings. Like really go deep. Yeah.
Right, right. All the pidgin Englishes. Yeah. So, yeah.
She's not allowed to do those voices. Not when there's royalty on stage. Like you can't put those voices together with royalty.
Fun fact, still what my BBC is set to and will never change from.
Lovely stuff.
Sure. So then... Charles shows up at Camilla's place, right? Her husband answers the door and he's like, let me get my chair, you know. And then they sing maybe my least favorite song in the whole fucking show, this I Miss You Most on Sundays song.
Oh, it's my certainly God. The most boring possible hook for a love song is that I miss you most on Sundays. It's not that is the most boring sentiment you could possibly address. Yeah, anyone. Yeah,
except perhaps Tuesday afternoon because there's half price apps at the Applebee's.
You know when your buddy has gone through a breakup and you're comforting him, you're at his house and he's crying and he thinks he's telling you something really deep and meaningful he and his ex used to do. He's like, and then we would watch Stranger Things and you're not allowed to say a lot of people watch that show together and separately. Yeah. It's not your thing.
Yeah.
This is that monologue, the song. It's the song.
Yeah, it has him going from like, oh, something about passions ablaze. And the next line is like, lazy walks and silly talks. You can't have silly talks and lazy walks as your thing. That is not your thing, Camilla.
Yeah, that would be like your song being shaven a haircut. Can't do that. That's not fair. But the point of this scene, though, is that Camilla is pretty sure that they can still make the tampon thing happen. So they decide to just fuck on the side.
Their solution is to conduct their affair in their friends, plural, castles, plural.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Relatable stuff. Relatable drama.
The poly members of our audience get it. You got to use the occasional buddy castle. Hey, you're not going to hear me until the commercial break is over, but it's because I'm doing that noise in the background and Noah cut it.
All right, so then we cut to Diana being mad about this to her sister, right? But this is where she decides she's got an idea. She's going to take control of the press herself.
Oh, and again, the lyrics are so bad. There's one line in this song. Too many smiles, too many yeses, too many dreams, which Charles depresses.
Oh my God.
Is this translated from a different language? Has this been through several different translators to get back to this? Because that's not an English sentiment.
Ah, and of course, we're like desperately trying to get to dresses there, as I'm sure the audience already knew, right?
Yes.
The chorus to this song is a pretty, pretty girl in a pretty, pretty dress. And I just wrote in my notes, Gloria Steinem is so proud.
This is the first time we get the magic wardrobe change, right?
Mm-hmm.
To further bastardize Eli's art.
Only slightly belied by the fact that she is wearing a circus balloon in the first half of the scene.
She explains that too many of the dresses in her wardrobe have too many frilly, frumpy fruffles. You didn't have to rhyme yourself into that corner. You wrote this. It could have been something other than an uffles to rhyme with.
Oh, they didn't know about delete, did they? Yeah. And also, by the way, this song has a distorted guitar and a harpsichord. everything sounds like shit with a harpsichord because a harpsichord sounds like shit, but nothing sounds worse with a harpsichord than a fucking distorted guitar.
Yeah.
So during this song, Charles realizes that he needs to pick a worthy cause, right? That's why Di is getting all the good press and he's getting shitty press is because she's got the AIDS and the cancer patients or whatever. And I'm like, oh, please don't pick homeopathy. But no, he picks architecture.
Yes, because he gave like a public lecture on architecture in order to try and find a way to renovate his own public image. And obviously, he did actually do architecture, so they went with architecture to rhyme it with lecture. But also because there was no way they were going to find a rhyme for biodynamic agriculture, one of his other big passions.
Honestly, they would have just rhymed boar, right? Like, they don't care. They don't care.
To be fair, of all the things Charles decided to speak out openly about, architecture is the only one he was kind of sort of right about.
Yeah, absolutely. That and some stuff around the environment he's not bad on. He's like, hey, we shouldn't destroy the environment, please. Okay, you stick to those two topics and say nothing else ever again, please.
Have you considered how easy Indians are to kill? No, we're doing architecture. All right, fine.
But of course, he's trying to do his lecture on architecture, but everybody is focused on Diana's dresses instead. And the queen is embarrassed because Diana's wearing too many dresses, wearing the wrong dresses. The dress wearing is bad.
Though. Yeah, it's so bad. It's so bad. Like, her big empowerment moment is wearing another dress. This isn't the feminist story that it thinks it is. And she's like just coming from going across the stage in a different dress. She's wearing a hat at one point and it's not her because she's coming from the other side. It's a different body double in a dress, trying to get as many dresses packed into this small thing as possible. Then the overall effect, because she's wearing so many layered costumes to get in as many dresses at once, the overall effect is to make it look like Diana spent half her life in ill-fitting dresses that did nothing to flatter her at all.
One out of four dresses will look great. Right?
And it has a line, which again, this is one of the most perfect lines to sum up this entire fucking musical. The stories girls are taught to believe are not the stories that a girl should believe. That is the line.
Nailed it, everybody. Let's head to lunch. What could rhyme better than believe and believe?
That's begging for the interval.
Rhyme. All right. Well, it looks like Diana has a plan, and that plan is to wear dresses and be pretty. So we get to take a break. But first, let me give Act 3 the hard sell. Will the play examine the deep psychological harm the public dissolution of their parents' marriage must have had on William and Harry? Would doing so underscore how fucked up it is to make a musical about it? Will they just devote an entire musical number to that time she wore an overly cleavagey dress instead? Find out the answers to these questions and more when we return for the discordant conclusion of Diana, the musical.
Hey, podcast listener. By now, you probably already know that we'll be doing God Awful Movies live in San Francisco on April 3rd.
And most of those tickets are sold out, but there are still a few general admission tickets left, and we've got just the news we need to sell them.
We are pleased to announce that we're going to be joined on stage by our very own guest masochist, Cara Santa Maria, for the live show.
Oh, really, guys? Like, right in front of me?
But you can't come to America. They'd throw you in a gulag.
Still.
That's right. Cara will be live on stage for all the shenanigans you've only ever heard. But act fast. There are less than 100 tickets left, and we have a feeling they're going to go pretty fast.
Okay, has Cara ever paused to read a fake newspaper? Never. She hasn't.
So grab your tickets while you can at godawfulmovieslive.com. That's godawfulmovieslive.com.
Have I mentioned how close I've grown to Cecil since we started doing a show together? It's almost like we become best friends.
Too far, Marsh!
You started it.
All right, gentlemen. I call to order this meeting of the evil British elites who will kill Princess Diana. Now, as you know, we're planning to kill Diana as revenge for embarrassing the crown with her affairs and philandering.
It's perfect.
Sorry. Yes, Reginald.
Right. Is it perfect, though?
Well, of course it's perfect. We're going to kill her.
Right, it just seems like that would just make her a national martyr rather than a fading in popularity tabloid subject.
Oh, yes, it might do that.
Also, if we're killing her for having affairs, are we killing Charles too? Or Andrew? I mean, Andrew did kids even.
No, I think he's on our side, is the thing.
Is he? Because he shouldn't be.
Look, we're going to kill Diana. And it's not going to make her a martyr or anything. Everyone will be like, whoa, Diana's dead. I better not embarrass the queen ever again. Okay?
Okay. So I feel like we're just going to end up with a very expensive Beanie Baby.
I don't even know what that means.
Not sure that I do.
The most expensive Beanie Baby is the Princess Di commemorative Beanie Baby.
Really? Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yep. I'm surprised that everyone in England doesn't know that. I
assume you have one. It's your legacy.
Right, yeah. And we're back for more of this shit, and we're going to rejoin the action with Barbara Cartland showing back up like she's from Tony D's House of Side Pieces.
Oh, it's so great. You did not think Barbara Cartland had more in her in this, but she does. She's back. Surprise Barbara Cartland, bitches.
I guess.
Yeah. And what's so weird is that she's here to introduce Diana's affair, singular.
Yes.
We'll go with singular for now.
Yeah, it was certainly in the musical. But the thing is, like, Charles's affair has been this marriage-destroying, first-act-creating, suicide-causing problem, and her affair will be this one burlesque number. And that is...
Yeah.
Like, they will barely talk about it for the rest of the play. They'll just be like, oh, and she fucked a guy, too.
Right, yeah. So now this is James Hewitt, and yes, that does rhyme with do it. They will get almost no use out of that whatsoever.
Almost no, but I almost went with best entrance because he enters this entire thing on the back of a pommel horse, basically,
yes.
But shirtless,
yes.
In jodhpurs. Or insane decision.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep, he's shirtless on a saddle.
Singing his name of like, James Hewitt!
Yes, exactly, like... Announcing himself like a Pokemon.
Well, okay. And the other thing, too, that makes this so fucking weird is that we meet him long before Diana shows up. So it's just Barbara Cartland singing about how fuckable this young man is for a really long time.
And it would have been great if that was the entire number. And then we go back to Diana's story. It's like, oh, yeah. Barbara Cartland was an absolute cougar, man.
Sorry. James Hewitt paid a lot in the Kickstarter for this musical. We just had to do a number about how fuckable he is.
So, yeah, but then Diana shows up and they have some really strained innuendo wherein a horse equals a penis.
Mm.
And then the old lady sings about how the two of them fucked, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
While every time his name gets said, the backing women keep going, James Hewitt. I wish that he did go around with a crowd of women that every time he flirted in real life, his backing women, James Hewitt.
Okay, it's so hard to remember throughout that this entire thing that it was done in earnest, right? Like that it wasn't just setting us up. Yeah. But okay, so we should probably address that, like, most of this movie is just an argument against monogamy, right?
It is.
Are you about to accuse me of writing Diana the musical? Because for the last time, no comment, no illusions.
Oh, and how do you follow up a song with such a profound name as Pretty Girl in a Dress? Why, with a song called There's Him, There's Her, where the main refrain is There's Him, There's Her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. And then it rhymes with there's him and her. Like yes. It just keeps going. There's him and her and him and her. And then there's him and her. It's like the 60% of this song is the words him and her. And it is
not interested.
Even Barbara Cartland looks like she is not interested in selling this. And we've seen some of the stuff Barbara Cartland sold in her books. And this is, she is looking down on this song. That's how bad it is.
Yeah. So that we get that song, and then we get Chuck and Di together at a formal event, and they're singing this song like where Di is trying to say stuff, and he doesn't want to listen to it, so he just keeps saying, just dance, and she'll like say something, and he'll be like, just shut the fuck up already.
Yeah, and he's got a point here, like, stop backstorying so aggressively, Di. You're in public, just have a dance, like, just quit for a moment, just have one evening, please.
But she explains that she really wants to make her marriage work with him, even though she's fucking her jockey guy or whatever the hell he is, cavalry officer guy.
Yeah. There's one fantastic moment in here where Charles is considering running off to Camilla the way that she wants to run off with her guy. And he says, maybe I'll run away to France like my uncle did for love. And just a quick reminder, it was not for love. His uncle ran off to France. It was picked the wrong side in World War II. Just a quick history lesson.
So, and then we get the scene where, like, Chuck's, like, spy or whatever tells him that that his wife is fucking James Hewitt.
Yeah, who the fuck is that narc? And why does he get a song refrain out of nowhere?
Yeah. Right? But yeah, then he runs off to Camilla and he's like, you know, I would give up the crown for you.
Never happened. He never said that. There's no evidence he suggested he'd not be king over Camilla. Yeah.
At all.
So yeah, but then Chuck and Dye, we see them, they're on like either side of the stage leaving their side pieces or whatever. And then after they're gone, the side pieces sing for a little while as though the two of them are going to fuck now.
Yes, that's what I wrote. Oh, Camilla and Hewitt are going to run together.
Yeah, it's like James Hewitt. He's done Dana. He's had a pop of Barbara Cartland. He's moving on to Camilla. Like, oh, you go, James Hewitt.
Just fucking his way through the whole cast.
Oh,
yeah.
God, it's the queen next. If this movie ended the queen with James Hewitt as king, that would have been perfect.
Perfect. And equally historical as the rest of the music.
Yeah, right, yes. So, okay, but when that song finally releases us, we get a scene where Chuck confronts her about being so damn charitable all the time, right?
Yeah.
This is the one time that we can all agree with the movie where she's like, well, but Thatcher sucks, right? And we're like, yeah, okay, yeah.
No, she Thatcher did suck. That's
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I've got fuck you, Thatcher, in my notes as well. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, there you go.
It's nice that we can all be united, right? Us, the royal family, the musical.
Yeah.
Just everybody can all sit down to the table and agree that Margaret Thatcher fucking sucks.
Yeah, everyone but my parents can agree that Margaret Thatcher sucks.
Mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. There you go. Well, so, okay, and then this is where we can really kind of see, I think, where the inspiration for this whole musical comes from, because this scene is actually good. Right, this song is good in my mind. Like and it's celebrating the actual, like, you know, probably best thing that she did. Right, this is the scene where she goes to visit with AIDS patients, and they tell her, "Oh, you should put on gloves." And she's like, "Fuck you! I don't need to put on goddamn gloves. I'm not fingering them." Right.
Yes.
And so she like got photographed, you know, hugging and embracing these and shaking hands with these AIDS patients at a time when like everybody was scared to even be in a room with an AIDS patient, right?
Yeah.
But to be fair, Charles has got a point, because he says you should wear protection to avoid getting AIDS. And he's got a point, like, bag up, Dana, you don't know where James Hewitt's been. I heard he flipped off the car. So like, you do need to wear to have protection.
She's quite the cougar, yeah.
I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised Charles is saying that about AIDS, because the only HIV that Charles recognizes is Henry IV.
This entire review was worth it for that. Yeah, line.
So I had it in.
I saw it in our notes, and I was like, I will grind this review to a halt and be like, "What other things do you have to say, Michael Marshall?"
There's also a great moment here where, you know, he's like, you know, people are going to say you're an opportunist, and she's like, "Oh, people badmouth Mother Teresa," and I'm like, "Well, yeah, because Mother Teresa was fucking
wrong
awful.
About that. She
was
just
a terrible human being."
I know you're just using a conversational convention, but I do need to point out every time someone mentions that lady that she tortured children for fun.
Yeah, she did.
I wrote, "Oh God, that line didn't age well," even though it was written well after we knew she was a terrible person. Mm.
Right. So yeah, exactly. Yep. Yep. It was already that bad when it was born. Yeah. So she goes off to, and he's like, "Try not to catch AIDS while you're at the thing." So she goes off to the thing. And then we actually have, like I said, the only good song in the entire thing, where she's talking with the AIDS patients. There is something like pretty fucking awkward about the dying AIDS patient musical number.
Yeah, there is.
But it is the high point of the movie.
And here's the thing, like, this is really genuinely one of the most wonderful things that Diana did. Such a humanizing and important thing during the 80s. It's sort of the peak of homophobia along with the AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
This scene is a little much, right? They all kind of turn into Little Orphan Annie sort of clinging to her legs. She says, "And you are my pet homosexual, so I will always remember."
Yep, giving her frothy little lines, like reviewing her outfit and stuff. Like, apart from your fashion sense, Diana. It's like, okay, that's a bit of a catty thing to say, given that's the one thing that Dana is claimed to be empowered by is her fashion sense.
Yeah,
and
right,
these gay guys are having a pop at it. Like, oh, come on, guys. Have some decorum.
So yeah, so she's like, "Well, we should all get our picture taken together." And they're like, "Oh, well, you know, there's a huge prejudice against, you know, people with AIDS and gay people, and we probably don't want to do that." And she's like, "Oh, come on." And they're like, "Oh, shucks. Yeah, let's do that." So
fine, okay. But if I get fired, I'm going to die from AIDS way faster. Yep. Okay. why not?
So, but again, like, yeah, you absolutely.
I love to take risks. What can I say?
Yeah, right. So, God. So then we get Diana talking to her sister about how, you know, her privilege is so very problematic, which I'm sure she talked about a lot.
Mm. She's like, oh, our problems are so minuscule. It's like, yeah, Diana, your problems were so minuscule. Like, yeah, you're right. Absolutely correct. Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
Small problems.
Also, maybe you don't know this, but your problems have been what the first half of the musical is about. You can't really shit on them now. I also don't know if this moment was on purpose, but this is what happens in the musical. She's like putting on her earrings. She's like, oh, I don't know. Just sometimes I feel like our problems are so small. Where's my fucking dinner? I feel like that wasn't on that purpose.
But that actually is the sequence. And she's like, well, I don't know. You know, maybe I'm overblowing this. I don't even think he's still fucking Camilla anymore. And her sister's like, well, no. He's going to a fucking Camilla party tonight.
Mm.
Right. And then Diana's like, oh, well, then I'm going to a fucking Camilla party too. So then we go to the party and Diana like surprises her way in and everybody gasps.
Before they gasp, like they're expecting this to be talking about how this is such a boring party because it's such a kind of an upper class kind of party.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a line from the crowd there saying, nights like this, I envy the poor. Their parties can't possibly be such a bloody bore. It's, fuck you.
It was probably great being Baby Marsh at this point, right? You got to fucking, you and your fellow smudgy-faced orphans were just checking chimneys for bits of gold.
Yep. Middle of the miners strike on the dole. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, woof.
Just a bunch of people being like, I'd hate to be Princess Diana confronting my husband's mistress right now. I tell you that for sure. Oh, I've been shot.
Yep. But then the very boring party gets super exciting. It gets to be, quote, the thriller in Manila between Diana and Camilla. That is the only clever rhyme in the entire goddamn play. Right.
I think it's the rhyme from which this musical was birthed.
Yep.
Yeah. They've seen the rap battle scene from Hamilton and thought, I think we can do that. We've got one line. I think we can vamp the rest, actually. I think that's how he did it. He just had one good line, he vamped the rest, and it came out well. So let's go for it, guys.
Yes, yeah. They have a fucking rap battle. Like Diana and Camilla go downstairs into the basement to rap battle each other.
Oh, and I really wanted it to devolve into a basement fight club or possibly evolve into a basement fight club.
Yeah, right. Now, and I don't want to get you too excited when I say it becomes a rap battle. Here is one of the actual lines, which I think we all wrote down in our goddamn notes. Oh, you're completely mad. Such delusion and confusion. How bloody sad.
It is really bad.
I just complimented him on in my notes. I had like the ink had not dried on my compliment about the fucking thriller in Manila rhyme, and then they did that to me. I'm like, oh, dude, come on. But yeah, so Chuck shows up to break up their rap battle.
Does he come in with a Bat Out of Hell reference? I swear he comes in with the like, you better stop right there. I gotta know right now, or something like that. Or had I just gone mad by this point?
Oh, okay.
And was like picturing Meatloaf like injected into this. I don't know. But I swear that was a Bat Out of Hell reference. It would have been the right time culturally.
Sure.
But he didn't know Meatloaf. So like, watch it again. Find out. See what you think.
So yeah, but also I want to point out here, because this is like the 15th time this movie has had Diana stop and like look right at the camera and go, I want to make this marriage work. It's entirely because of the kids and my respect for the traditional family. I have nothing else to gain from this. I want it to work, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so she does her, like she goes after all his enablers in her song, and then she does a mic drop and she leaves.
I think as she leaves, one of the last lines is, Fun. That's where we go with this as well. So she rhymes fun with fun. She rhymed fun with done and then with fun again.
With fun.
Yes. Emphasized it as
fun.
It was not fun. None of that was fun.
But if you don't say fun, it won't catch up with the where you need the rhyme right, to yeah, be. Exactly. Marsh, come on. Don't be a dick. So then we have this after rap battle drive home, right?
Yes. This is where she accuses him of spying on her. And as someone whose mom followed all of this drama when it was happening, this was a huge part of the Diana drama, is who was spying for who and who was spying on whom. Mm-hmm. But just, I want to remind everyone that everyone involved in this is a member of the royal family currently, right? It wasn't so much spying as, well, my royal retinue drove me over to here and yeah. we are aware of that.
Right. Yes. I mean, not everyone's currently a member of the royal family. Famously, at least one person in Diana the Musical is no longer yes. a member well, of the royal family.
At this point in the musical.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah. Fair. Yeah.
So yeah, but she goes 3-2-1 monogamy starting now. And he's like, no, let's just both fuck around. Damn. All right, let's just do that. Which is great, right? So she goes to James Hewitt and she says, hey, like, I have permission to, like, fuck you as much as we want. But this is when he tells her that he's been transferred to Germany, right?
Yes. He's like, I got transferred. To which she responds, if you leave, you and I are no more. And I wrote in my notes, yes, that's how it works.
That's how leaving works, yeah. But she's like, well, I can make your transfer not happen. You know, you're in the military. I'm the fucking princess and shit. And he's like, no, I must go to Germany for my honor. And I'm like, you're not at war with them. This is the 80s.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's been assigned to Germany for 2 years. That's 40 years too late. Germany legitimately isn't far enough for this to be that much of an issue.
No.
So it's fine. We can still see each other on the weekend. It's like, yeah, you're royalty. You can probably hop a plane on the hour and a half it takes you to get to Germany. You'll be fine.
It's just, that's just like, that's across the state in many states here in the U.S. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Don't you understand? I hate to fly EasyJet. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, we should probably break up then.
So, but he doesn't want to be her side piece anymore. So he storms off. And thus ended all her infidelity. Okay. So she's singing to herself again. And then we all get excited for a moment because she calls somebody on the phone and she goes, Andrew, I must speak to you. And we're like, oh, what?
We were so excited.
The jokes are about to get so much easier. But no, it's a different Andrew.
I'd forgotten about the Andrew Morton, I forget the guy's name, the book that he'd written about it. I completely forgot about that. But yeah, yeah. I was so excited when it was Andrew for a moment.
And if they do a weird thing here, which, again, as someone whose mother obsessively followed all of this, they make it seem like she chose to do the Andrew Morton book because her affair was over. Like, she was like, well, now that I'm not cheating on anyone, the truth must come out.
Yes.
And that she had been working on that book throughout. Like, whatever motivations you want to give to Diana, and I think a bunch of them are actually kind of sexist, but, like, whatever motivations you want to give to Diana writing that book and leaking those tapes, it's not that she was like, well, my affair's over, so fuck it. Now we're no cheating allowed.
Yeah, right. Right. So, yeah, but so this is where she decides that she's going to fight him heroically in the tabloids. So what she's going to do is, this guy who's writing a book about her, she's going to, like, record tapes of herself answering all his questions and then send those to him.
Yeah, this is so fucking stupid. She doesn't want to give him anything on the record, so she's dead dropping him audio tapes. So now there's audio of her saying these things with zero deniability. She might as well have offered to have the tapes notarized and then sealed with her specific wax seal when she gave them over.
I need to be secret so you can only have my thumbprint.
Yeah, right, right. And all my passwords. So, but he writes her story. They do this song where the refrain is like the words come pouring out, right? And then it's the something else comes pouring out, and then the hate comes pouring out, or yeah, it's whatever.
They really tried very hard to make, and then the guy with the typewriter typed down the words that she said seem really urgent and exciting. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And
they're really right. Yeah. But everybody rushes to read the book. The prince sees it and finds out what's in it, and he is not pleased at all.
And the thing is, the only reason we know that this happened, like the whole thing with the tape recorder, is because after Diana died, Andrew Morton, the writer, republished the book as a second edition with all of the third-person bits turned into first-person bits to make it clear that, oh, no, she said this actually to me directly to capitalize on her death. Because it was like, well, people have said that this is what's happening with Diana, and then they change that to, this is what's happening with me right now.
Yeah.
And he published that after she died, very soon after she died.
This is a find and replace job. This is excellent.
Yeah, 100%.
Fuck. All right, so then we cut to Charles talking to his mom about the book, right? And she's like, is it true? And he's like, I don't, why you gotta be bringing up old shit?
Yeah. Yes.
There's also like, he's like, do you want to meet my mistress, mom? And she's like, no.
No, man.
I believe that happened. I do believe that happened.
Yeah, that's probably real.
I just want to have a moment of sympathy for the queen mother here. This is
the queen,
lady,
not the queen mother. Queen again, mother, to be clear.
Who's
different lady.
As a child, was brought by the hand out during the bombings to show solidarity with her people. And now her 30-something-year-old son is like, yes, I have it tough too, mother. I'm cheating on my wife with my mistress. There had to be a moment where Elizabeth was like, could you all just fucking tighten it up? Could we all just sort of tuck it in a little bit?
Yeah.
I know you guys aren't doing the Nazi thing, but I did the Nazi thing. So if we could all just sort of tuck it, just so tuck it in.
I would agree, except she may have said, why aren't you more like my very famous favored of my children, Andrew.
Yeah,
Andrew
was her
explicitly favorite child. So if she had been trying to modify the behavior of the others, I don't think it's modifying it in a better direction.
He's just right, hanging out with kids all the time. He loves charity.
Oh, no. So, okay. And then we get this scene. I love this so goddamn much. So Charles is, he's painting a landscape that they're going to use on a stamp, right?
On a stamp. He's, I can't do this right now. I've got important stamps to design.
Yes, right. Yes. He's got to sit. They have to present all the hard stuff he has to his prince. But on the stage show, they've set the easel way too low, right? So he's like trying to paint right around the area of his penis. It makes no fucking sense.
If he turned it and it was a self-portrait of his penis, it would make sense.
Yeah, right. Well, so they don't want to cover the man's face while he's trying to sing and do his stuff. So they put this easel like tiny, like Smurf-sized or whatever. It's fucking hilarious. So yeah, but this is where he says he's got an idea. He sends his guy out of the room, right? His security guy or whatever. The guy's name is William. Why not just give that character a name that isn't one of your kids' names?
Yes.
But anyway, he sends that guy away and he's like, I've got an idea.
Well, specifically what he says, there is one thing I've been considering, but it's rather drastic. And I want him to say, I know a guy in Paris.
Here's the thing. What if we get her driver drunk?
He goes, what do you think? And he goes, I think a song. And I'm like, God damn it. Fuck. But what he thinks is that he should go on TV and admit that he's fucking Camilla, right? Because that'll help.
Or at least that he tried super hard not to fuck Camilla and just fell short of that high standard right.
Yeah.
Guys, this really happened. And it is one of the most excruciating things that has ever happened in world history. If I could undo Charles' weird interview where he admits to his affair or the Holocaust, I'd pick the Holocaust, but I'd pause for long enough that everyone would be mad at me. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think this is that bad in the sense of it's not even the worst interview a child of the Queen has given to a British news.
You can't just always go back to the fact that Andrew is an unrepentant pedophile, Marsh, okay?
No, you can go back to the fact that he felt that interview helped clear his name from being an unrepentant pedophile because he said it was impossible for him to sweat and that he was in a Pizza Express at the time.
Yep. I did forget that. I still feel like the Charles, I'm going to say I still feel like the Charles one is worse.
And then he's like, I think that went well. I thought that was good.
Mum, yes, I just wanted to let you know I've cleared everything up. No, I told them I don't sweat. Yeah, no, don't worry.
So, okay. So, but now he's going on TV and Diana's got to figure out what she's going to do when Paul has an idea that is a song. Mm. Paul is her manservant or whatever.
No small parts, Paul. Fuck yeah.
And his idea is her tits, right?
Yes. The revenge dress.
The revenge dress.
And I think this again comes from Paul Burrell's side of the story because he's making out that he came up with the revenge dress. I think the revenge dress is one of the dresses he stole after she died. There was definitely a series of dresses that he stole after she died. I wouldn't be surprised if this was one of them. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay, but Marsh, just follow with me here.
Okay.
The revenge dress in your house was a nuclear bomb had been dropped on London. The amount of photos of a revenge dress that showed up in my life after she wore this slightly revealing shoulderless dress. Unspeakable. Unspeakable.
Yes. No, this was everywhere. And that's why it gets an entire ridiculous song about it, including the line, a bitch on wheels in 6-inch heels.
Yes.
And I thought, that sounds like a really precarious getup for a revenge dress. Like, if only her revenge dress was for her to be on wheels, to be like wheeled in like siege equipment.
Yeah.
Oh, like Hannibal Lecter. Now there's a revenge dress, right? Yeah. Yeah, but she wears the revenge dress, or as they say in this song, the F-U dress, or no, the feck you dress.
The feckety, 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 feck you dress.
That's the dress in question, yes. And they say that like 8 times. So then we have the queen, like, she sits down Chuck and Di for a stern talking to, right? Sorry, as they're setting up this scene, the servants chastise us for being interested in this play for
yes,
a second.
They do.
Where they look right at us.
All you sods can't get enough. Have you got no shame? It's pretty fucking preachy West End musical about her affairs and her tragic death.
Yeah. Right.
Also, like, there was an actual War of the Roses. Relax, okay?
Yes. So, yeah. But then the queen talks to him. And, well, so first she talks about how much she wishes she could behead Diana. Mm. Right.
Yeah, just casually referring to how much easier it would be if the queen could have Diana killed. It's like, oh, okay, we know what you're doing here. Yeah. We know what this musical is alluding to here.
Right.
One person in that writer's room was like, so we're just going to hide the truth. We're just going to hide the truth.
This is the reason that Heath is off this week.
Honestly, I left a gap in my notes because I thought Heath would be on this. And I'm like, okay, there's going to be like a 15-minute bit where I have to talk Heath down from this conspiracy theory as well. Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, but Diana explains that she wants a divorce. Well, the queen has a song for her. So now the queen is going to sing her bio to us. Well, not her real bio.
No. The version of the queen where she was just the wife of an officer. That's all she ever was. Look, I don't, like, she's singing, oh, I was just like Diana once. And she wasn't anything like Diana once. She was always one in line to the throne.
Yep.
You know, that's all, that's what that was. And it's not like she married. It wasn't ever that her husband was the one in line to the throne. It was the queen who was in line to the throne. I have got zero respect for the monarchy, but do not do the Q dog dirty like this song does her dirty.
It's fucking, so this is a thing that she mentioned one time in one interview. It's the most PR-y of PRs. She didn't even bother sticking to it, right? They were like, hey, you and your husband lived on this island for a little bit. And she was like, oh yeah, I loved being poor. It's the fucking best or whatever. And they were like, hey guys, we need to talk about the queen's deep, deep desire to just be an officer's wife. It needs an entire musical number.
An entire fucking song.
Where she longs for the fucking sea.
Yes, exactly. But in the middle of her longing, suddenly everyone around her, in a voice way too loud for the moment, sings, but then the king died.
But then the king died.
I genuinely spat out what I was drinking.
That's the funniest part.
Amazing.
It's the funniest part of the musical. There's no words for how loud and how sudden it happens.
But God, imagine telling the story of the actual fucking queen by leading with the man she was married to.
Yeah,
that's
right?
What we're doing here.
Yeah. But she says, you know, she got paparazzi too, damn it. And she didn't go fucking James Hewitt about it. Right? But then
that we ever found out about.
Well, that we
know
about. Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've seen how James is with this cast, you know. I never fucked him except when I was dressed as Barbara Cartland. But the queen says that they can get divorced, right?
Yeah. And then Diana says about how, well, you're going to have all of your bodyguards. And Diana says, I don't want the bodyguards. That's going to be people who are like going to be spying on me at all times. And the queen does this like, well played face.
Yes,
oh,
yeah, well played.
No,
I was totally
like, she's already mentally on the phone to a drunken French chauffeur while Diana is saying this. Like, Ori, I've got a mission for you.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah, but she's like, well, you'll need the security because the paparazzi will be hounding you and driving really fast behind you and stuff. And she's like, no, I'll be
no,
fine.
No, it's
sure.
Fine. Wink. And can I say, like, look, this musical is by no means tasteful, but it gets really weirdly not tasteful in this moment, right? Where she's like, what's going to happen? I'm so dead. Come on. Be chill.
I also want to draw your attention to one other line in this song that the queen sings after, as Diana leaves and she's singing to herself. She's singing about herself in the third person here. She says she never complained. What the fuck did she have to complain? She's the queen of goddamn England.
Yes.
Yeah.
So then Diana comes out for a swan song, which is awkward because the queen actually owns all of the swans. I don't know.
She has to do a goose song.
But yeah, but she's singing about how great it's going to be to be a regular person again.
And my opening line here is just die already. Come on. We know where this is going. It's like, oh, I'll be a regular person. I can stand in a queue again. It's like, yeah, like you're just going to be a regular lady in the queue at Starbucks at any point in the rest of your life. Ridiculous. All right, I've got a regular latte for a Lady Diana Spencer, daughter of Earl Spencer, formerly Prince. Actually, can we make it a large? I can't fit all the titles on the side of the cup.
We gave you a Trenta so we could do all your titles.
Yeah, it's only half full, though. So, yeah. Oh, and then Camilla does meet the queen, after all. And we learn that Diana auctioned off some of her most famous dresses.
Yep. We learned that from Paul Burrell. Yeah, no, he's announcing that smugly, knowing he's already lifted the best ones from a wardrobe before the auction takes place. Yeah,
and, oh, look, to your credit, she did auction those off for, like, cancer and apparently a landmines crisis. Marsh, was there a landmines crisis in England? And can I make jokes about it?
No, she went abroad, and she, was it Mozambique? Or I forget where it was, but she walked through a landmine, like a field of landmines, like to bring awareness to the fact that there were shitloads of landmines lying around in countries.
And that was another, like, that and the AIDS thing, like those are the two, like she really did use her image for a good thing there, like drawing attention to the fact that landmines were like a terrible thing and we should.
Man, I was picturing baby Marsh just hanging out on a big sea mine, you know. Come on, Cheryl, not free and I'll give you me lunch money.
I mean, look, honestly, a musical, well, not a musical, but a West End show that spent quite a lot of time around Princess Diana doing the landmine advocacy, anti-advocacy. She wasn't pro-landmine.
She was pro-landmine.
She was doing a commercial in the brochure.
How easy it is to make it across this fucking field. I should be toothpaste right now.
A play about how much time she spent preparing for that. That would have been genuinely, there's some interesting stuff there. It's one line. She gets, her landmine stuff gets one line. They don't even show her wearing the visor that she wore at the landmine thing, which is one of the most iconic images of Princess Diana. I don't think we see that.
You're right. But yeah, so, and then we see Camilla like and Charles together going like, wow, sure hope the queen doesn't live to be 116, right? Well, that would sure fucking suck. And then all of a sudden the chorus just goes, breaking news out of Paris. And we're like, already? Okay, fine. I'll take it.
Yeah, it's the AIDS guy announcing that she's dead. So, it is. Okay, glad that guy did all right, actually. He came through.
Yes. Yeah, he outlived her anyway. Yeah. So yeah, and they confirm that that Princess Diana has died, which is awkward because she's still on stage at this moment.
She is. They're breaking the news to her that she died.
She acts like she's hearing it from them. She's like, well, fuck. Have I been a ghost this whole time?
Is that why she like awkwardly shuffles off stage? Because as she leaves the stage, she's walking so carefully like she shit herself. And all I can assume is that the stage wasn't deep enough for the amount of walking she needed to do by the end of the song. So she had to make every little step last.
Had to make it milk that 14 bars of final. And these are the last lines of this musical. I want to be very clear.
Yep.
The last line of this musical, sung line, is the people who will change the world are not the ones you think will change the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's incredible last line.
Whew, they wrote that and said, fiend. Unreal. All right. Well, Marsh, it takes a lot to make an American living under the second Trump administration feel superior to any other nationality. But this play has managed to do it, at least for this fleeting moment. My sympathies to you.
You know what? No problem at all. This is genuinely the fourth time I've watched this, and I guarantee it is not the last time I've watched Diana the Musical.
Coming back for another hit.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for our review of Diana the Musical, although Marsha's might be ongoing. But that is not going to do it for the episode just yet, because we still have a whole more month of secular movies to go. So Eli, tell us, what's on deck?
Well, Noah, to continue Heath's secular tackler, we will be talking about one of the best, worst, good, bad movies ever made. We will be watching Nicolas Cage's Face Off.
Oh, God, I hope we'll find something to make fun of.
I love that movie.
Me
so
too, though.
Much.
Yeah, me too. This is going to be a problem. But with that to look forward to, we're going to bring episode 538 to a merciful close. Once again, a huge thanks to all the Patreon donors that help make the show go. If you'd like to count yourself among their ranks, you can make a per episode donation at patreon.com/godawful and thereby earn early access to an ad-free version of every episode. You can also help a ton by leaving a 5-star review and by sharing the show on all your various social media platforms. And if you enjoyed this show, be sure to check out their sibling shows, The Scathing Atheist, Citation Needed, D&D-, and The Skeptic Crowd, available wherever podcasts live. If you have questions, comments, or cinematic suggestions, you can mail godawfulmovies@gmail.com. Tim Robertson handles our social media. Our theme song was written and performed by Ryan Slotnick of Evil Drafts on Mars. All the other music was written and performed by our audio engineer, Morgan Kirk, and was used with permission. Thanks again for giving us a chunk of your life this week. For Heath Enright and Eli Bosnick, I'm Delusions. Promise to work hard to earn another chunk next week. Until then, we'll leave you with the American Graffiti close.
Everyone involved in this musical had their fingers crossed that they get to do a sequel when things end up tragically for Meghan.
Oh, God. England would continue to do the monarchy thing for decades after this.
The Queen wanted Diana's face off.
Recording.
I'm red.
One.
One, two, three, four.
Full.
Five.
Five.
Eli, are you there?
I forgot to count.
Okay. One more time. One, two, three, four.
Four.
Five.
Five.
I also didn't hear you say I'm back, so I thought maybe we had lost you, but nope.
No.
Quite forgetful. Twice in like the last 4 days.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I was trying to figure a smooth way to work into the conversation that I'm on GLP-1s. I wanted to brag about those. And that focus meant that I completely
GLP
stopped thinking
one,
about our
two, yeah,
exactly.
Two, three.
Yeah, see, that would be a perfect way.
All right, here we go.
Got certain the boundaries.
Yeah.
Recording.
I'm red.
Push. None of the fucking buttons required of me. It was insane.
Are you on now?
It was insane how much I failed at that. Yes, I'm on now, but there are no words for how badly that went.
All right. Well, I'm going to do the five count, so we'll correct it.
I started off in the gay voice, then I realized, oh, I'm not the posh guy anymore. I've got to turn it back. But
turn straight, like Tommy Robinson.
Any posh voice, it can go. Alice and Warren have this thing, walking down the street, of gay, posh, or foreign. As to you, sure. The person who's walking down the street, is that guy, is he gay, is he posh, or is he foreign? And it's actually quite difficult to tell. Yeah. That's their little game. You can have that.
Sure. Eli, it's a real shame that nobody has come to you with the kind of money it would take to really just develop the podcast-iverse in the
right?
way that you see it, right? Just
there.
With full like computer animation and shit like that.
Right?
It's a shame.
Fucking... So I feel like Amazon Prime, they did the Santaverse. They owe me.
Right? Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yours is deeper. It's more thought out.
Podcastiverse.
So, Eli, you losing any weight yet?
No.
Not yet? How long before you'll be losing weight, you think?
Probably tomorrow morning. Probably wake up 20, 30 pounds down, 40, 50 pounds. I'd like, can I say, so here's the problem, right? If I just get a little thinner, right, and a little healthier, and I'm just sort of back to being like a chubby dude, that's not funny. I need to go like full Ozempic skin hanging off so that whenever anyone sees me, right? You remember how Toby got cancer in The Office, and then that actor was like, oh, I'm just not going to tell anybody I had cancer. No one will notice. And then there's just a season in The Office where that guy's like, hello, welcome to the ghoul bound. I want to be that, and I want, because our audience is woke, I know how many of our listeners I will trap in literal hell just being like, hey, how's it going? How's your summer been? And then being like, you are a skeleton. Talk about why you are bones. You are bones now. Where is your body? Doesn't all work right. on Brits. I'll get off the plane and be like, that fella used to be fat. He did. Look at him. Get him a sandwich.
All right. This content is scanned credentialed, which means you can report instances of harassment, abuse, or other harm to their hotline at 617-249-4255 or on their website at creatoraccountabilitynetwork.org. This podcast is a production of Puzzle and a Thunderstorm LLC and was created without the use of generative AI. Its contents may not be used for AI training. Copyright 2026. All rights reserved.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.